Defenders to the Real Films podcast, a podcast hosted by two siblings where we discuss a different horror theme each week. This week, I am your host, Tinsel Taylor, and my co-host is...
Cup-a-cheer Curtis.
Well, it took us four tries to do that intro, didn't it?
Have a cup of cheer.
Curtis was really pissing me off. I'm also sweating. It's like so hot. It's like 80 degrees
nice.
Out.
Nice. Yeah, it's 77 here. Not bad.
Yeah, it's hard to have a cup of cheer during this Yuletide season when it's like 80 degrees outside.
Yeah, I'm enjoying a cup of cheer, but it's actually very cold beer. But, you know, still a cup of cheer.
You know how there's like coffee and iced coffee? We have iced cheer down here
right,
in Florida.
Right, yes, exactly.
Anyway, today we are doing our annual Christmas episode, and I couldn't be more excited. I was thinking to myself, like, will we ever run out of films to do a Christmas episode? And I honestly don't think that we will. There are so many out there.
Yeah. You know, sometimes I think, will we? Won't we? But then we have three Christmas horror movies come out in the span of 1 week. And you think, no, we'll never run out. This isn't Thanksgiving, folks, where we have completely run out after 3 years. This is a real holiday. And Taylor, I don't know if you noticed, Shudder dumped a bunch of Christmas movies on Shudder recently, including the entire Silent Night, Deadly Night 6 film series. So we should just go, maybe we could go through those one by one for the next three years or so.
That would be amazing. In reading some reviews for one of the films that we'll be covering today, I saw a lot of people compare it to Silent Night, Deadly Night and be like, finally, like a good version of Silent Night, Deadly Night. I was like, who thinks Silent Night, Deadly Night is bad? I thought that was commonly accepted that it's a good movie.
It's but kind of a bizarre thing to say, but go on.
Yeah, alas, before we get into today's episode, I have a few announcements. I feel like a real podcast because we have some announcements at the top. Number one, if you haven't already, please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast on the Apple podcast app or wherever you listen to us. We've gotten a little stagnant with those reviews, and I would say they're not reflective of the engagement that we're getting over on Instagram or our listens, which have remained pretty steady. And so I have to think there's some loyal listeners out there who just haven't put pen to paper, Curtis. And I please, I
pen to
implore
paper.
You to do.
Are they writing a letter to the podcast app?
I want them to write a letter to their senator.
And who will then take it to the podcast app so they can post the review.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Exactly, yeah. Anyway, if you haven't yet done so, please do. It helps more people find our show. And our second announcement, Curtis, is we're taking our now annual Yuletide hiatus. I just like saying Yuletide.
it's a great word.
Last year we took a hiatus pretty much through the month of December, which was two-part, one... We get a little break, and it's actually three-part. One, we get a little break. Two, we have more time to watch new releases for our annual, you know, top 10 episode. And then three, Curtis, obviously it's the holidays. We have families, just like all of our listeners probably do. And it's a busy time of year. So we take a little break and come back strong in the new year with our top 10.
Right.
So this year we will be getting back on January 11th with our top 10 of 2022 episode.
Wow. Yeah. More than a month. I wish I had that time off of work too, Taylor. But
yeah,
podcast is my second job. So at least, you know, some time off. And I think it always lines up well every year because we do our Christmas episode. It's not like we're going to do like Beastly Freaks Part 2 in between Christmas and Top 10. So I think we set the our listeners up for a cup of cheer, a.k.a. Some ideas for Christmas horror watches. And we go on to the Merry Night and celebrate the new year by celebrating last year.
Yeah.
2022 horror movies. I'm excited to do that one. And I can tell you, I'll try and watch. My goal is, before that episode, to watch at least 8 more movies. I was looking at my list. 8 more. We'll see if I can complete it, but... I'm hopeful.
And that'll bring you up to how many for the year?
8. No, I'm just kidding. It would bring me up to, I think, either 44 or 45. So I'm doing pretty good.
And I'm at 30. I think I'm at 34 for the year. My original goal was 40, but I'm now also shooting for 45. I think it's possible. And Curtis, just like a sneak peek for our listeners, on that top 10 episode, because that's always our most popular episode of the year, or at least one of the most popular episodes of the year. But not to toot our own horn, I do think that this year's episode is going to be our best yet, because 2022 has just been an incredibly strong year for horror. And I have a feeling that, unlike in years past, you and I will not have as overlapping top tens as we have in the past. So what say you, you know, just brief overview of 2022 as you see it.
I agree, Taylor. I think this has been the deepest year. We haven't, in my opinion, we haven't had a year since we recorded this podcast where I feel top 10 movies, I could see any of these 10 being in a top 10 in any given year, you know, like in terms of just depth of quality of movies. We'll discuss whether or not I think there is a classic in the bunch like we've had in years past. Though I will say, you know, my number ones have, I wouldn't say all of them have gone in my top 100, but they tend to. I'm not sure if that's the case this year. We'll see. We'll talk more about it. I also do want to point out, Taylor, a lot of horror movies are coming out this final month of the year. The Mean One, the Grinch horror movie, comes out on this Thursday. Yes. We're recording. It comes out on, I guess that would be 12/9, December 9th. And also Bones and All just released the, Luca, the guy who made the Suspiria remake. It's a movie with Timmy Chalamet. Timothy Chalamet as a cannibal. It's kind of a love story, but yeah. I'm excited to check that out. And there's a few more coming out as well, and I know Shudder is planning on to drop some foreign horror on there before the end of the year as well. So, yeah. Like I said, a lot to check out, and it's been, again, a strong year. Even if all those movies I just mentioned end up being bad, we'll still have had a great 2022. So I totally agree with you, Taylor.
I agree. And I'm excited to hear that about Shudder. I find December is usually like my foreign horror month because for whatever reason, that's when either a lot of them are released or available in the US, or I just have time to sit down and watch subtitles for 2 hours.
Sure.
I'm looking forward to that. Before we get into our episode again, there's a lot of upfront content here. Curtis, what are you drinking this fine Sunday afternoon?
Taylor, I am drinking a new-to-me beer from a familiar brewery, Woven Waters, as we like to call Roven Rotters while we're there.
No, I like to call it Whispering Waters.
Yes, well, we call it different things. The more we start drinking, the more we get the name wrong. But this is my a brewery in my neighborhood, and they're more, Taylor, they're more like an IPA place, but I went in there the other day on my way home from work, and I was looking in their freezer, or their fridge, I guess. I don't drink frozen beer, but they had a beer called the Anomaly Oat Lager. I don't know if I've ever had an oat lager before, but if I had to describe its flavor, it's a little bit more of a bold lager, but very, very flavorful and very fresh tasting. I'm loving it. This is one of the best beers I've had by them. Unfortunately, I don't think they sell outside of the Tampa area, so most people listening to this will not be able to get a hold of this, but if you ever are in the Tampa area, Woven Waters,
yes.
Even if you're not an IPA fan, they make their own seltzer, you know, stuff like that. And they're really good. They know what they're doing over there, Taylor.
Mm-hmm. A good, like, fruit beer or, like, sour beer there last time we went. Mm-hmm.
They're kind of, like, akin to Ology in Tallahassee. And, in fact, they partner with them on a few different beers. So that's very, very similar to, or as I like to call, again, you drink a little bit more. I like to call it Rology. But, hey, teach his own. Right.
Yeah, the vibes are immaculate in Woven Waters as well. I love hanging out in there. Well, Curtis, I don't have any wine left, so I had to scrape the bottom of our of our beer fridge and hold up a Red Stripe. I'm also drinking a lager, so cheers to that. I'm not a big beer drinker normally, so that's going to be a slow sipper for me. I need to find some, like, holiday beers. I've been feeling that itch recently. So this is more of a summer beer.
I had the Sam Adams Winter Lager, I think, on the last podcast. That's what I was drinking. And I think I was drinking something different. Definitely was drinking a little bit of it last weekend, and I had one last night while watching, maybe we'll talk about this later, an impeccably paced and plotted Christmas movie starring Lindsay Lohan. But that one's always good. I mean, it's nothing special, but it is very good. But like you, I just haven't seen too many in the grocery stores lately, which is unfortunate. But those are some of my favorite. I like them even more than the Oktoberfest or the pump. You know, just something about the cinnamon and orange.
Don't say that you like it more than pumpkin beers.
I just did. I mean, what do you want me to do?
Well, yeah, you did. I don't know. And then my other favorite holiday treat, of course, being mulled wine. So I think I might make up a batch of mulled wine. Yeah.
I like fruitcake.
Warm wine.
I'm a fruitcake guy.
You actually are a fruitcake guy. Listeners might think that we're
Oh, no,
joking,
I'm dead serious.
You like fruitcake.
I'm actually kind of surprised by its reputation. It's pretty good. I mean, I don't know.
It's okay, yeah. Yeah. It's okay. I think people are freaked out, much like the plum pudding that Granddad described to us, that
oh,
it can
God.
Last for a year.
let's create a whole separate podcast for that one, but go on.
There's a lot to unravel with the creation of plum pudding.
Yes.
It makes a lot of sense. Like, when you consider English food, it makes a lot of sense that they attempted to conquer.
Taylor, you're gonna make me sick. We have to move on.
Okay. Well, just before we get into our films, Curtis, I thought I'd give our listeners a little recap. This is our longest running, like, recurring episode that we do in addition to our top tens. As you said, or as we discussed, there's no shortage of Christmas films, so believe it or not, and this actually makes me feel very nostalgic, this is our fifth Christmas mm-hmm. episode.
I was just about
to
say
it?
That. I yeah. We covered...
Well, I have a list of it. Don't worry, Chris.
Okay, yeah. I think I know,
yeah.
but I stopped myself. Okay. I was totally right about what we covered our first episode, just for the record.
Well, actually, and I don't have the actual films we covered. I just have the episodes, so maybe you can enlighten me. But our very first Christmas episode was episode 8, Christmas Ho-Ho Horror. And I want to say in that one, that was the better Watch Out Christmas episode.
And our Real Films classic, I would say this film is... people watch this movie and they think of our podcast, Silent Night, Deadly Night, the aforementioned. So that was I think that's where we discovered Punish. I think I'll drop that in here right now.
You bad kid.
Punish!
Yeah, so it's just a classic. I think that's probably, looking through these first episodes, that's probably my favorite of our early episodes for sure.
I would agree. I think that's probably the best. Like, if you're going to be an Uber fan and go back and try to listen to a lot of our older episodes, which I don't know if I would necessarily recommend,
no.
but if you were, this is one that I would definitely steer you towards. It's a good one. Episode 33 was our next Christmas episode, Creepy Christmas with 2 Ks. That's kind of, we went through a period of time where we were substituting a lot of C's with K's,
right.
and this was one of those.
Yeah, I like Mortal Kombat. I think we were talking about Mortal Kombat for some, anyway, go on.
This one was another good one. I mean, I'm going to say that about all of them, but we covered Rare Exports, A Christmas Tale, which was actually lightly listener submitted. Justin, producer Justin, recommended that one. And then we covered Kremlins, which I had never seen before at that time.
Delightful movie.
A Christmas classic. So our next one, our next Christmas episode was episode 60, Christmas Horror, in parentheses and all caps, Punish, obviously. do you remember what we covered in this one? This was another, I'm going to say this about all of them, but this was another really good one.
Well, Taylor, I am looking at the episode as you go through them to refresh my memory. But
nice.
I will close my eyes and pretend like I, Krampus and Anna and the Apocalypse.
Anna and the Apocalypse.
Right.
That's, Anna and the Apocalypse is, of all the films we've watched for the pod, probably in my top 10, like, probably wouldn't have watched it if not for the podcast, but I'm so glad that I did. This is now on my rotation. I watch this every year. Of course, every year being, this is the third year.
I watch it every year.
And then our last year's episode, 2021, episode 85, Christmas Comes But Once a Year, parentheses, or Fear. Mm. Good one, Curtis.
Thank you.
And we covered Santa's Sleigh. And A Christmas Horror Story. Now, Santa's Sleigh, Curtis, refresh my memory. That's where William Shatner plays the radio DJ.
No, you got him backwards. That's the one where Goldberg plays a killer Santa.
Okay. I don't remember that movie at all. Like,
you don't remember Goldberg screaming all of his catchphrases and chopping people? It was very campy. Very campy movie.
Yeah.
But I can't say it was the most memorable movie I've ever watched either, but I still enjoyed it.
Yeah.
But Christmas Horror Story, on the other hand,
that's a good one.
Is a great movie. I really enjoyed that one.
Yeah, I'd say underrated in the Christmas horror canon. Like, if you were to look up Christmas horror movies, this one doesn't pop up as often as, say, you know, Silent Night, Deadly Night, or Gremlins, or Krampus, even.
Jack Frost.
Jack Frost. any number of movies where Santa beats people up.
Right.
But this is up there.
It's also an underrated anthology movie, I must say. It's one of the better anthologies we've watched for this podcast, for sure.
Yes. And an underrated Santa character. And you know what, Chris? I'm not going to say any more on that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Today's episode will be joining the great pantheon of Christmas episodes that we have done. I'm sure Curtis will come up with a great title for it that will repeat on next year's Christmas episode. But without further ado, because there has been much ado, Curtis, why don't you get us started with our first film?
Yeah, so there has been much ado, so I don't want to keep us on that, and I'll move on. It's good, right? Anyway, Taylor.
Yeah, I was taking a sip of water, but I did laugh.
Okay. Taylor, let's move. So let's move on to my film, and I'm covering today Christmas Evil, 1980, directed by Louis Jackson in his only film that he's ever made, which I found kind of interesting. He didn't even have a Wikipedia page, Taylor, so I had to do a little digging to even find out information about him, but not bad, Mr. Jackson. And it's starring Brandon Maggart as Harry Stadling, our main character. Taylor, do you know who Brandon Maggart is?
No.
He is Fiona Apple's dad. The lead in this movie. He would go on to later denounce this movie and pretend like he was never in it. But regardless, that's he sad. Is Fiona Apple's dad. Jeffrey Mc...
Wait, for a second... For a second, for some reason, I thought you were going to say he went on to denounce Fiona Apple, and I got really nervous. I was like, why are we getting into this?
Merry Christmas. Jeffrey DeMunn as Philip Stadling, Harry's brother, and Diane Hall as Jackie Stadling, Harry's sister-in-law. Those are kind of our main characters in the film. And Taylor, this is a movie I had watched a few years back and remembered being pretty good and pretty like unique for a Christmas movie. With a name like Christmas Evil, you would think, hey, this is kind of like akin to Silent Night, Deadly Night. And in fact, this movie went during the Video Nasty craze in the UK, was actually confiscated and seized during the Video Nasty panic in the UK. But I found it to be, especially on a second watch, to be more like Taxi Driver or Maniac, the 1980 Maniac, and less like kind of your typical slasher. And it's really weird. You go back and read reviews, and it's reviewed as if it was like just a Friday the 13th clone. And I really want to, I'm really excited to talk to you about this because to me, this movie is very different from that. So let's get into it and let's get into the plot. So this film centers around it. Well, we're set in suburban New Jersey, which I found to be great because you get all sorts of great characters in this movie, you know, guys with their bellies sticking out and, you know, very stereotypical New York / New Jersey people in this movie. They even work at a factory, have a union, all sorts of stuff. So I just thought this movie had a lot of character from its setting, even though there's probably a billion movies that look like have like the same film grain from the 1980s where they're set in New York. I mean, Maniac is one of them, but just thought this film had a very good sense of place in suburban New Jersey. But we actually don't start with adult Harry. We start with child Harry with his brother. And they are his brother, Phil, and they are greeted on Christmas Eve by Santa Claus. Or, well, they're standing on the stairway and they see Santa there, and Santa goes over and does that little hush thing that he does. You know, shh, quiet kids, don't, you know, I don't know. I actually don't know why I guess don't wake up the parents, but his mom, their mom is standing right there. But anyway, they go back up to their room and, you know, bratty Philip is like to Harry, hey, Santa's not real, that was dad. And Harry's like, no, it wasn't. Look, I'm gonna go downstairs and prove, you know, see what Santa's up to and prove to you. And of course he goes down there and he sees mommy kissing Santa Claus and more.
And more, I was about to say.
And this, of course, as is the case for every movie ever made, a very traumatic event for young Jeffrey, or excuse me, for young Harry. And we go about, I don't know, 30 years later, 35 years later, Harry's all grown up. He is a worker at the toy factory and is obsessed with Christmas. And in fact, in one of many chilling things in this movie, one of the first things we see Harry do is pull out a pair of binoculars and spy on the neighborhood children. He keeps a naughty book and a nice book on all the children. And he's really fond of a very, gosh, what's her name? A young girl. What's her name again? It's very,
I don't remember.
Okay. I'm going to be honest with you folks. I don't remember the names of the little girl, but you get this scene where he's like, oh, she's such a good girl and writing down all her good traits. Just very creepy stuff overall. Yeah. And of course there is a bad kid, that he really doesn't like as well.
Curtis, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, look, I was a cool kid. We all know it. I don't have to. But one of the great scenes early on, Harry's walking home and there's a bunch of kids. All the kids love him. You know, I guess, you know, he's seems like he's genuinely good with kids in some scenes, and he's really sweet. He's not creepy face to face all that much with the kids. And he's like, kids, if you had one wish, what would you want? And one of the girls like, I want a pony. The guy's like, a skateboard. And this bad kid is like, I want a lifetime supply to Penthouse. And I'm like, that's just
kind of funny. Kind of funny.
Just really classic. And so this all kind of culminates, you know, he's keeping his Naughty and Nice book. He is, you know,
he's
just become
it twice.
He's making a list and checking it twice. And Christmas season is coming around. He sees on Thanksgiving Day, the Macy's Day Parade, the giant Santa float. And this inspires him to ditch his family, ditch his brother, Phil, and his wife, Jackie, and make a Santa suit and actually super glue some Santa hair upon his chinny chin chin, Taylor. And there's also a subplot of him being really upset with his bosses. They're kind of have an idea to pledge toys to a hospital, but they're trying to kind of go back on that promise. So Harry decides one night, I'm going to go out as Santa. I'm going to deliver these toys to the hospital, and I'm going to go around taking revenge on naughty boys, well, mostly naughty adults, aka his coworkers, who relentlessly make fun of him. And that's kind of the setup to our story. There's a few interesting subplots. There's also a very interesting perspective in this film, because it kind of goes from him being kind of a murderous killer, but then you have scenes where he goes into like a party or goes to this hospital and everybody seems to love him and really appreciate him and be like, thank you so much for the toys. You really cheered the kids up. It's really interesting because at a lot of points in this movie, you don't know, are we getting this from the perspective of Harry? Is this really happening? What part of this is real? So I thought this film was really very interesting, especially for an indie movie in the 1980s made for, you know, six figures, but low six figures. It said $500,000, but I think that number is adjusted for inflation. I don't know, Taylor. I wanted to just get, before I get kind of into the Christmas stuff, I wanted to ask you just like what you thought of this movie, and mostly, was it what you expected when you saw the title and when I recommended the movie?
Yeah, no, it certainly was not what I was expecting. And in fact, this is one of those movies where I feel like I almost wish I could temper my expectations for all movies, because I end up judging it based off of what I wanted the movie to be or what I was expecting it to be. And then if it's not that, I'm like, man, I didn't really like it that much. This, I feel like, is kind of victim to that. I thought it was going to be kind of a fun slasher type of film, or like kind of like cheesy Christmas type of film. But yeah, as you said, it's like Taxi Driver. It's like weirdly serious and like kind of dark. It's not that I didn't like it. I just felt like it wasn't enough of any of those things. Like, it wasn't that violent. It wasn't like that psychologically damaging, if you will. The one thing it did have in spades was the Christmas theme, you know. Sure. I mean, there's a lot of Christmas elements. I'm sure we'll talk about it. But to me, and I hate to say it, but like what really kind of lost me with this film was him as a lead character. I just didn't find super interesting. Like I almost was like the film wasn't as interested as getting into his psyche. It was just like, oh, he saw this traumatic thing and now he's obsessed with Christmas and that's kind of it. And I'm just like, as you said, like, he seems to be received differently in different settings. So it was hard for me to know, like, are we rooting for this guy? Like, are we supposed to like him? Are we supposed to feel sorry for him? So I was just kind of confused by the film.
I guess my take on it was, I really felt like this man was very severely mentally ill and like emotionally damaged. And, you know, by the end of the movie, I felt really bad for him, because what I was seeing was this guy is kind of a guy that if you were to see him on the street, dirty, dressed up like Santa, you would not receive him warmly, or society would not receive him warmly. So I really felt as though a lot of these positive scenes later in the movie were just made up in his psyche, not real. So ultimately, I just kind of ended up feeling bad for him. And initially, I don't know, I was left kind of feeling a little hollow by the movie, because I'm like, well, what was the point of that? And that's where my research really helped kind of put this movie in perspective, and how tied it in, not just so we obviously have the trappings of a Christmas movie. You know, you have a killer Santa, You have, it's set at Christmas time, it's snowing, you have all sorts of stuff, but like, what does it all mean? Because it's clear, this movie, I mean, like you said, it's not just like a slasher. This is a movie that has some sort of perspective and is about like a very troubled man. And I found this review in 2012 by Time Out, in Time Out by Tom Huddleston, that kind of gave me a little bit of perspective, and I just kind of wanted to get your thoughts. And the review is, Lewis Jackson's sole outing as writer-director, known by its original 1980 U.S. release, You Better Watch Out, looks on the surface to be just another festive slasher in the Black Christmas mold, but this genuine oddity, named by John Waters as the best seasonal film of all time, is a much, and John Waters, very big fan of this movie, is a much more compelling and subversive beast. Yes, it's about a guy in a Santa suit who kills people, but the complex reasons behind his violent spree and the level of sympathy Jackson and his star Brandon Margart engender for their hapless anti-hero mark the film out as something weirdly special. In contrast to most slasher fics, this isn't about anything as simple as revenge. Jackson's concerns are bigger: social responsibility, personal morality, and the gaping gulf between society's stated aims at Christmas time, charity, hope, goodwill to all men, and the plight of those left on the outside, the children, the mentally ill, and those who don't fit in. So this kind of gave me a different perspective on the movie. Like, the way I felt as though our protagonist is sympathetic really didn't vibe with me, because again, he's supposed to be a killer. But when you read it through this lens, where it's kind of a commentary and a criticism, you know, our main character, you know, really wants to help out these children in the hospital, for example. You know, we really identify those two things together, and it's kind of weird because he's a killer. But when you realize the movie is kind of a criticism of how we don't really embody the values of Christmas, even when it is Christmas. We just say that we do. We say it's about charity, hope, and goodwill, but what about Harry and what about these kids? I think it gives a kind of interesting angle on the film. And I think it, you know, I think this film confronts a lot of aspects of Christmas in an interesting way, and doesn't just have the trappings of Christmas. So I don't know. I just wanted to get your thoughts on that. And if that's something that makes sense to you, or do you think, well, this is just a low budget horror movie and, you know, it has delusions of grandeur, but it doesn't really say that to you. What say you, Taylor?
Somewhere in the middle of that. Like, I get that that's supposed to be what the film is about, but it doesn't really like come through for me, you know, because Harry is not, to me, a very sympathetic character, because at the end of the day, I understand that he has problems, and I disagree that the reasons are complex. We get one scene and probably he had some underlying issues and this trauma was like too much for him to bear, you know. But at the end of the day, like, some of the first things that we see him doing is like spying on children and like, you know, so I get that he's supposed to be like, you know, goodwill towards children, especially, you know, the scene with, you know, him bringing toys to the children in the hospital. But at the end of the day, he's also like one of the naughty boys, the naughty boy, the one who said the thing about the Penthouse magazines. Like, we see another scene where his like mom is like slapping him across the face and throwing him in a car, you know, like, so it's like, well, why don't we explore the reason why children might be naughty? Like, why don't we explore, like, quote unquote, maybe they don't have supportive homes, you know, lives or whatever. That's not getting off on a tangent, but I guess my point is like, anything that's supposed to paint Harry as sympathetic, I could probably like pretty easily poke holes in. And so then I'm left with like, it's okay if he's not sympathetic, but he has to at least be interesting. And to me, that's kind of where this film falls apart, is like, this is not necessarily a character that I cared to spend that much time with, and the movie is pretty much solely about him. So,
well, let me ask you then, because I wanted to talk a little bit more about this film, about this character, and specifically the way the film portrays his mental illness. And I, tell me if this is a reach, but the first movie that I would think to compare this to, other than Taxi Driver and Maniac, which I think are very apropos, even though those two movies are better, this movie reminds me a lot of Joker 2019, a movie that you and I are both fans of.
Jokerified by that, yeah.
And because this movie is about a person with mental illness who is demonized in one way because the film has him going around and murdering, but it also shows us kind of a compassionate look about kind of how it came to this, you know, not just his background with his seeing mommy kissing Santa Claus, but also, you know, just the way the rest of the world treats him. He's kind of like, the only people that treat him any sort of well are like children. And I also thought it was really interesting. We haven't talked much about his brother and his sister-in-law, his brother's wife, but they're really conflicted with how to deal with Harry. They clearly love him and they want him to come to Christmas and Thanksgiving. And especially his wife, Harry's brother's wife feels as though Harry's brother is too harsh on him. But Harry's brother is also like obviously trying to deal with like a very I don't know, a very mentally disturbed family member of his, and maybe doesn't have the best way of going about it, but still clearly cares for his brother. And I thought overall that this film handled that issue really well. And again, it was very much apropos to me to like something like Joker again. So I don't know. Do you feel as though, I don't know, I guess just a conversation, because we do watch a lot of movies where, and we don't talk about it this way, but we do watch a lot of movies where the main character is mentally ill. And it's like, even if it's like we're talking about Jason, for example, and it's just like, well, it's fun. He kills and does everything. But you watch a movie like this and it, you know, really makes you think about it. And I just wanted to know, like, is this a good portrayal? Yeah. Like, or is it the fact that he's killing kind of like more demonize him rather than make you, like, I don't know. We both like Joker, but I don't know what your thoughts are about that. Like,
Joker.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the difference with Joker and Taxi Driver and Maniac is that, like, they swing so far in the opposite direction that it becomes a movie about, like, these evil acts and, like, how grotesque that is and how, I mean, how perversely interesting that is. And especially, like, you know, your direct comparison of the Joker, he's someone who comes to embrace that outsider lifestyle and make it part of his personality. Sure. I think where this film falls flat is that it, like, tries to both, like, show him doing awful things and try to convince us that he's like, no, I'm a good guy. Like, nobody in all those other movies thinks that they're a good person. And so that kind of lack of, I guess, I don't know, self-awareness, I just don't find that very interesting. I'm like, how did he change throughout this movie? He really didn't. Like, he just kind of devolved more into, like, in, you know, it's a tragic progression of, like, someone who's left isolated and without positive, like, interference, I guess, which is interesting in its own way, but again, just like the film doesn't explore that enough. Like, it raises a lot of interesting ideas that I don't think are very well explored in the film. And then you think to yourself, well, okay, but it's just supposed to be a Christmas horror movie, it's just like supposed to be kind of silly fun. Well, the film clearly wants to do more than that, so
it's not silly fun.
And obviously we don't have these kinds of discussions about Silent Night, Deadly Night, because that's not what the film is supposed to be. But I think if that's the type of film you're trying to make, then those are the kind of discussions that are warranted. And I just don't think that this film rises to the caliber of other, you know, similar films, because we're so Joker-fied on this podcast. Sure. Like, we love the Joker. And so
if you're gonna,
you know, it's just not,
you have
like
a big shoes to fill. Yeah.
Right. Big clown shoes to fill.
Right.
Joker.
I don't know if Joker's really a clown. I mean, I guess he is, but
he is a clown. Yeah.
Anyway, Taylor, one thing you can say about this movie, it is pretty unique among all of the Christmas films that we've watched. I really don't know if there's anything else like this out there. Maybe there's a guy that thinks he's a pilgrim Thanksgiving version, or Easter Bunny. I'd love to see that. But
we watched that on our last Thanksgiving episode.
Well, I mean,
those people that thought they were pilgrims. That was a good movie.
That was great.
This is a good movie. Yeah.
pro pilgrims podcast here, Taylor. But I don't know if you're in, if you're into the idea of something a little different on Christmas, you want to be depressed, maybe, you know,
yes,
maybe a little bored. I know that's a big criticism of this movie. I didn't find it boring personally, but, and I'm surprised you didn't mention that, Taylor. But that is a big criticism, a lot of people that reviewed it. But it's a true holiday oddity, and definitely an interesting stark contrast to Silent Night, Deadly Night, where the protagonist also is traumatized by a Santa Claus, someone dressed up as a Santa Claus. So, in a different way. But anyway, Taylor, the trivia for this movie.
Yes.
It's a little... not
I'm
great.
Sure it's amazing.
It's not, it's, you know, it is whatever. But though it was the success of Halloween that ultimately allowed this film to be made, it was actually written much earlier. Accordingly, Lewis does not consider this to be a slasher film, but rather a film that has more in common with Frankenstein. So, there you go. There's a news report on the children's hospital that Harry watches that kind of inspires him to go down to the hospital. And it's the news report is based on the real-life Willowbrook State School in New York, where children were kept in deplorable conditions until the investigative journalist Geraldo Rivera exposed the pitiful state of the hospital, which led to a subsequent closure 15 years later. And it earned Geraldo a Peabody Award, Taylor. We've mentioned Willowbrook before in a piece of trivia on this podcast, as a matter of fact.
Honestly, and like more than one time right. before. I feel like this is like the third or fourth time we've mentioned. You love Geraldo Rivera, though.
I mean, I'm a Geraldo head. We all know that. Yeah. And then Taylor, finally, John Waters recommends this as his favorite Christmas-themed film. John Waters, folks. He's probably
this
the reason
is a John Waters podcast, yeah.
Right, and it's this. He's probably the reason this movie has been so widely seen. So kudos to him. At the very least, having the opportunity to watch something as interesting as this. Thank you, John. And Taylor, that is Christmas Evil.
Thank you, John. I'll never forget seeing your film, fill in the blank, at
Female Trouble.
What was it? No, it wasn't Female. Remember we went with Mom and John Waters was there at the San Marco Theater? Oh, gosh. It was in Smell-O-Vision. Anyway.
I thought it was Female Trouble for some reason, but I
couldn't be wrong. It was not Female Trouble. It was a movie that started with an S. I'm sure Mom's yelling at the podcast right now. Are you looking it up?
I'm looking it up, yeah. It was Female Trouble. No, I'm just kidding.
It was
Polyester.
Polyester. Yes, it was Polyester. Great film. Good stuff. Mm-hmm. John Waters. Great guy. Love him.
You are, you bad kid.
Punish!
Okay, well, Curtis, thank you so much for that coverage of Evil Night. Wait, what is it called?
Christmas Evil.
I totally forgot the name of it. Oh, sorry. It's not called Evil Night. It's called Christmas Evil. Okay. All of these Christmas films have the same names, to be, like, fair to me. They
sort of.
All called the same
they sort of do.
Well, without further ado, because I got us off on quite a few tangents there, let's get into my film. We are covering Violent Night, 2022. Just came out a few days ago. And, Curtis, this is only the second time that we've reviewed a new release as part of our regular episode. Do you remember the first time we did this?
No.
Okay. It was episode 69, which was our listener-submitted episode, and we covered Saint Maud, which ended up being both of our favorite horror release of 2021. So that was high bar. Don't think we're going to match that today, but...
I think we will. Go on.
Okay. Well, anyway, Violent Night, as I said, was just released on Friday, December 2nd. We're recording on the 4th, and we both saw it opening night, so that's fun. It was opening on Thursday, but... I was wrong. It is directed by Tommy Wirkola and stars David Harbour as Santa, Mr. Claus. John, and I can never pronounce his name, John Leguizamo? Yeah. As Mr. Scrooge. Leah Brady as Trudy Lightstone. Alex Hassel as Jason Lightstone, her father. Alexis Lauder as Jason's entirely too attractive wife, Linda. Don't know why she's with him. That's going to be a
he's an uggo. He really is. And he's not very charming.
His family is horrible. Yeah. Anyway.
He tries to be charming and he's not. It's really weird.
Yes. And then Beverly D'Angelo as his hard-ass mother, Gertrude Lightstone. Of course, Curtis Beverly D'Angelo. The mother from National Lampoon, Christmas Vacation. Quite possibly the best Christmas movie of all time. Maybe it's just because I relate to Clark Griswold too much, but I do really enjoy that film. And it has an amazing ensemble cast as well. I just want to give a shout out to Edie Patterson, who plays Jason's sister, Alva. She's in The Righteous Gemstones, and she's honestly so funny in The Righteous Gemstones. She doesn't have as big a role in this film as I would have liked, because I just find her absolutely hysterical. So, Violent Night, Curtis, since it's a new release, I don't want to give away too many spoilers, so my plot synopsis is going to be a little bit shorter today than it normally is. Do you agree with that?
Yeah. It's your movie. You can do whatever you want.
Okay. I'm sorry, you just were looking off in a bunch of different directions. Didn't seem like you were listening to me, but that's okay. Okay. Let's get started. David Harbour, as I said, he is Santa. And Curtis, he's lost his love for the holiday. Sad to see. At the beginning of the film, he's taking a break. It's Christmas night. He's delivering presents. He's going east to west. That's how time works. And he is taking a break in an English pub. And he's like there, and there's like a mall Santa there too. And he's just shooting the shit with the mall Santa. And he's saying, you know, children these days, they're losing their Christmas spirit. They're becoming more materialistic. We get a montage of kids just requesting money and Amazon gift cards from Santa. And then he leaves the pub on his sleigh, much to the delight of the pub bartender, before turning around and throwing up on her. Yes. And that, I think, really sets the tone for the rest of the movie.
I agree, Taylor.
If you will. He's a bad Santa.
He is. TM. I think, yeah. Thank you. But Yeah, he's bad but lovable.
Yes. David Harbour, and Chris, I don't know how, I know you're not a big Stranger Things fan, which is fine, but David Harbour, I think, plays this type of character very well. Like,
right.
Troubled, but lovable. And normally that's a character trope that I don't particularly care for in films, but he does it very well, and I think he does it amazingly in this film. Anyway, meanwhile, we meet all of the aforementioned Lightstones. Son Jason meets up with his estranged wife, Linda, and his daughter, Trudy, before driving to his mother, Gertrude's estate. There they meet with his sister, her boyfriend, and his nephew, his sister's son, and the festivities begin. They're celebrating Christmas all together on Christmas Eve. Santa eventually shows up, David Harbour, to deliver presents, and courtesy finds one of those massage chairs that has, like, the massage feature for your legs, too. And he falls asleep drinking a glass of, like, really old whiskey that he found in the bar. This is kind of a funny scene, because
it was just really funny because you have a massage chair, and anytime I go to your house, I'm just drinking and in your massage chair, and I was like, Santa knows what's up.
I do have a massage chair. People are like, anybody who comes over to our house is like, let me get in this thing, which I understand. It's very nice. So, anyway, Christmas party, but the caterers are actually a group of mercenaries led by a man calling himself Mr. Scrooge, which is kind of funny. And they are there for a fortune that's supposedly hid within the house, and they take all the Lightstones hostage. Santa, he's upstairs. He quickly realizes something is amiss. He tries to escape, but then that tingle, that magical Christmas spirit is somewhere still deep within him. Mm-hmm. Trudy, the young daughter, she is a rock star of his nice list, and he's like, I gotta help Trudy. So he stays and attempts to help the Lightstones, and that's where I'll leave it. That's only, what would you say, Curtis, like, at most 30 minutes into the film. Like, not, I hopefully didn't give too much away, but
yeah, I think that's not, right.
Yeah, it's not a complex plot. You'll hear people, like, I've been reading reviews that are like, it's like Die Hard, like,
sure,
type of Die Hard meets Home Alone. That's what everyone's saying, you know, but mm-hmm. a little bit more to the nth degree, if you will.
Right. Very violent night. Take the violence seriously, folks, I would say.
Yes. Well, yeah, let's get into it. Like, what did you think of this film?
Taylor, I thought it was a lot of fun, for one. You know, I don't know what how to put it. I'm not, like, a big fan of modern movie comedy. The best way I can put it is, you know, like, when something happens in a movie and a character says, well, that's a thing. That's not very funny to me.
I apparently think it's very funny.
I don't think that kind of humor is funny. You know, like, I guess just this movie.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
You know, I don't know how to. I wish I could articulate it better, but I think, you know, when you see it, there's modern movie humor that's thrown into a lot of action movies. But
yeah,
I feel like this movie had some of that. But the really funny part of this movie was just how violent it was and the interactions between the characters. Like, yes, our Santa's making quips when he kills people. Spoiler alert, it's called Violent Night. Santa does kill some folks in this movie. But the gore, you know, I was watching this movie with, like, a pretty packed house. And there was, like, gasps and stuff, but there would be a gasp and then a laugh. It's, like, very shockingly gruesome, but in a very funny way. Like, an Dead Alive or Evil Dead 2 style. So that part of the movie I really enjoyed. I thought, I will say, our Santa here is a very good actor. Some of the acting in this movie is fantastic, and some of it is really, really bad. David is a terrible actor. I don't know where they found this guy. I don't know.
David. Oh, the boyfriend.
No, the main character. I'm getting names mixed up. Is that who's our main character? The guy.
Oh, Jason.
Jason. Just a terrible actor.
He sucks.
He really sucks. Bad. Just, like, totally unlikable and just could not get to him. I was happy when they shifted kind of the main character duties to the kid, but I thought the kid, she's a kid, but she just wasn't a good actor. She was very, like, Disney-fied acting.
Okay. Yeah, she was okay. She was very cute, so that helped. Like,
right.
They did a lot of close-ups on her sweet little face. Yeah.
So. I think our kid acting, this would have been fine kid acting maybe like 10 years ago, but, you know, like, it just wasn't great. and she's a much more sympathetic character, and she is cute, and she has good chemistry with Santa here. I enjoyed that.
Yes.
But overall, I really liked the movie. There's just like some of the characters I just didn't love, but you're not supposed to like them. They're supposed to be bad and annoying, but I, at the same time, you know, we're supposed to be rooting for them too. So like these rich assholes that I hate, yeah. I don't know. You end up rooting for Santa, you end up rooting for the little girl, but by rooting for them, you're also rooting for these people that you hate. So I thought that movie was a little weird in that way, but this movie is incredibly touching as well. The parts of the movie that have kind of I was very surprised because, Taylor, as you know, I watch a lot of these Hallmark Netflix Christmas movies. There was and they're all really cheesy and bad. There was part of that in this movie, but I like that. You know, I'm interested to know what you thought about it, but I thought this movie mixed like violent action and Christmas spirit very, very well. Like even if you're like just a Christmas movie fan and you can handle the gore, I think you'll like this because it has that special cheesy, like that Christmas cheese that you want in your holiday movies.
I don't want to give away how Santa and Trudy start interacting because I actually think it's a pretty clever, you know, plot point. But there's a few scenes of them interacting. Let's say there's four, you know, main scenes. By the third one, I was starting to get like, okay, like she's just like, Santa, no one else believes in you, but I do. And I was like, okay, I get it. Like,
we get it. She's a good girl. Okay.
Yeah. Like it did get a little like saccharine after a while in a way that was a good contrast to the rest of the film at first. But then after a while, it kind of made the plot drag a little bit. Like Justin, we went to go see this together and he mentioned at the end that he really liked it, but felt that it slowed down a lot in the middle. And in my mind, that's a lot of because of these scenes.
Yeah. Taylor, this movie is an hour and 50 minutes long and it really should just been an hour and a half. That's like a big complaint about I have about modern movies in general, but it could have been maybe even 15, 20, 10 minutes shorter.
I didn't personally feel like I wasn't ready for it to be over necessarily, but it did drag in parts in ways that I didn't feel like advanced the plot that much. That's kind of my main gripe with it. Curtis, I thought it was very well acted. I do want to draw a distinction between like the characters and the acting, because I think the acting was good outside of Jason, who like the vibe was totally off.
Where did they find this guy? Who the hell is he?
Well, it wasn't even the actor. It was like his character, and I don't want to give away too much, but like, you never really until the very end, you're like, what is his deal? Like he and his wife are broken up, but she comes to his family's house because Christmas is really important to their daughter. And like the number one thing is like, why would she do that?
Right.
He sucks. His family sucks.
He's totally swagless. He has zero swag.
He's ugly and has no swag. And she's absolutely beautiful. Like it just boggles the mind. So that kind of gives a weird vibe. But I will say, like, the rest of the movie, the rest of the characters, I think, are pretty well acted for, like, the type of character they are supposed to be. I do want to give a special shout-out to, I'm going to fuck up his name again, John
Leguizamo.
Help me out. Leguizamo.
Oh, yeah, he was excellent. Yeah.
He was fantastic. I had most recently seen him in John Wick 2. He had a small part in John Wick 2, obviously. Yeah. But the last movie I really saw him in earnest in was The Menu, and I thought he was, like, totally flat in The Menu. Like, did not like his character, thought it was bad. So seeing him in this film was, like, felt like an extra treat, because I was like, he was so good. He had a lot of those funny quips that you were talking about, but honestly, some of them made me laugh. I'm not going to lie. I tend to agree with you on these modern comedies. Like, I call it the Marvelification of movies, where everything has to be everything. Like an action movie has to have quips and stuff. It's like,
you know, like
not funny, flat.
I don't want to laugh. I want to see like beefy, steroided out men, like red faced, beating the shit out of people, and then the villains to be like wanting to destroy the world and humorless. Like that's good action movie.
It's one thing for Bruce Willis to have one line where he says, yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker. Like, it's funny because it's the one line he has. But, like, this thing where we have to have a quip every 5 minutes is...
It's annoying.
Yeah, it's annoying.
Yeah.
And so... I thought... Yeah, so, sorry. I thought he was very well acted, and I thought he had some pretty good lines in this. And then, Curtis, just because I saw this in a lot of middling to negative reviews, what do you think that this film accurately implemented its premise, or did you feel like the premise started getting stretched thin towards the end?
I mean, I thought it was fine. You know, like I said, I would have made a leaner movie. I would have preferred a leaner movie because there is a little bit of filler. You know, I would have liked, I think there was enough Violent Night Santa going around. I would have liked it to maybe be in a shorter movie so I could feel like it was a bigger part of the movie. I liked the Christmas cheer, the Christmas message, because it's very funny as juxtaposed with, like, the violence in the movie. And I don't know. I think the stuff that could have been taken out is some of the character interactions, some of the stuff the bad guys were doing. I, like you said, some of the conversations that the kid was having were a bit much. I just thought the movie could have been leaner, but I don't think it out like wore out its welcome or anything. I just, I just thought it could have been like a leaner movie, and maybe then, you know, it would have come back off better to a lot of people.
Yeah, like, you know, a lot of, again, a lot of people compare it to, you know, Die Hard, Home Alone, and say, like, well, it's just a bad Santa, you know, killing people. Spoiler, but you already said that. Like, it's not.
I mean, anybody who sees the title of this movie will know what it's about, but go on.
But to me, I think the premise works because we have this added element of, like, and again, I don't want to give too much away, but Santa does have a backstory that I think adds a lot to, like, the overall plot of the story. Because, again, remember, the beginning of the film, Santa has lost the Christmas spirit. Like, it's almost like he doesn't want to be Santa anymore. And, like, we see a lot of films about, like, how do you find the Christmas spirit again? Well, this is Santa rediscovering the Christmas spirit. And right. I think that juxtaposition with the violence, and actually I'm about to get into, like, a little review that talks about that. But I think that juxtaposed with the violence makes the premise go further than you would think it does on paper.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
it would have been interesting to get more background. I'm wondering what... I'm not very familiar with Santa's, like, actually, like, St. Nicholas or the background of how... You know, we've seen movies about Krampus and stuff like this. This seemed to be, like, a Norse mythology type thing. You know, he uses... I won't say, but I would just would have loved to know more about that if there was going to be something added to this movie. You know, like, I would have... Again, would have been nice to have it leaner, and if they were going to add something, it would have been have a little bit... It would be, like, cool to see a little bit more background, because I think that would have informed why he gets his Christmas spirit back a little bit as well.
Maybe. I thought the background was sufficient. And again, the film drags in parts, but not nearly enough for me to be like, well, they should have changed this about it. Sure. You know, I think on its face, it's a good film. I think most people will enjoy it. So kind of getting back to the violence of this. Obviously on this podcast, we watch a lot of Christmas horror movies. So Christmas and violence, those are things that go together in our minds because we just watch so many of those types of movies. But of course, for like mainstream audiences who might just be going to see this in theaters who are not horror fans or whatever, like they're going to be like, wow, this is a really violent film. And something, I read an article in The Atlantic called The Truth in a Violent Santa by Megan Garber. And the premise of this article is like, this is a Christmas film for 2022. And something that we don't often get to talk about on this podcast are like, because we occasionally only do mini reviews, like we don't dive deep into new releases, so we never have the chance to talk about how films reflect our current society, if you will, and for better or worse, this article kind of dives into that in the context of like Santa regaining his Christmas spirit but through violence, basically. And how that's like a reflection of the time that we live in 2022. So this is a bit of a long quote, but I want to get your thoughts on it, so listen up. They say that monsters are culture-wide fears cast screenward. Holiday movies can do the same kind of work, but from the other direction. They reflect what people most fear by making claims about what they most value. How fitting, then, that 2022 has reached into its bag and delivered a Santa who slays. Violent Night's title is not joking around. Its characters meet their ends by way of burnings, beheadings, and I'm not going to say the rest because I don't want to do too many spoilers, but... And the agent of all the killings is typically Saint Nick himself. Before Santa was married, the film reveals he was militant. In a flashback, and again, I won't get into that, but just know, it is explained in a flashback. Santa of the present day blends elfin magic with the scars of human war. That fusion differentiates him from other subversive renditions of Claus. The gore here is not an exception to all the seasonal cheer. It is instead integral to the film's definition of holiday spirit. In a moment when violence infuses American politics and culture, here is a Santa whose capabilities as a killer help him believe in himself again. And I just didn't really think about the film in that in those terms before I read this article, but it kind of makes sense to me, which is like this film is essentially saying that Santa regains his Christmas spirit because he like violently protects someone on his nice list. And just what do you think about that envisioning of Santa, you know, kind of for our modern age?
Well, Taylor, I don't find the idea of like even an iconic character like Santa being like extremely violent to be something all that novel, just because this is just a movie that's in the mold of a traditional American action movie. You know, I was thinking of a number of different extremely violent action movies when I was watching this. You know, kind of the way that Santa goes about his killing, you know, you're reminded of Rambo, you're reminded of Die Hard, as you mentioned, you're reminded of Predators. These are all movies that came out in the 80s and early 90s. I mean, I think, you know, the only other culture that has kind of like a strong violent action film background is kind of Hong Kong, you know, John Woo movies and things like that. But this is just kind of, I don't know if it's more a reflection of our culture right now. I think it's just a movie that is in the mold of a traditional American action movie, but they're like, well, what if it was Santa? I think that's as far as I thought about it. Because yeah. Again, I thought this movie is like, in a way, kind of my pump was primed a little bit because I heard the comparisons to Die Hard before I watched this movie. And I was like, oh, this movie is like Die Hard a little bit. But I kind of just saw it that way. It's just, this is a American action movie, but with Santa.
See, that's interesting because I definitely see that, but I saw it as like a violent Christmas movie. Like, you know, so I think that the way that you approach this film will impact how you, I guess the way you approach this film will kind of impact how you interpret it. I guess I will say, because the one folly I would say of the Atlantic article is like, well, this isn't the first time we've had a violent Santa. Like, it's the first time that a violent Santa has been shown. Like, he's violent because he's trying to regain his Christmas spirit, I guess. But I don't know. It's a bit of a stretch because in a lot of ways, like, this film isn't that unique. You know, I think the things that make it stand out are like the acting and the sheer violence of it all. And like David Harbour as Santa, it's top notch. Like it's good, it's fun, but it's not like super unique. So in that way, it's kind of hard to like analyze it in terms of like, what does it say about 2022? Sure. I don't know. What did Silent Night, Deadly Night say about 1984? You know, it's kind of the same, you know.
I wonder if it's one of those things, like we now go back in retrospect and are like, man, look at these movies that were, you know, 80s. Look at these movies that were made in Reagan's 80s, you know, pillaring, you know, the hyper-capitalist, you know, and socially conservative values of our time. It's just like, I go back and watch those movies, and most of the time I'm like, oh yeah, these are hyper-masculine and super violent, and that's how a lot of movies are now. I mean, we haven't changed all that much. We added a lot of, you know, mostly pretty superficial diversity to our casts, and, you know, maybe like, you know, again, the quippier dialogue, but in many ways that's these kinds of movies are very, very similar to stuff that was made. And I don't, you know, made in the 80s. And I don't think a movie right now, I don't think Violent Night is a reflection of Reagan society, even though it's very, very similar to Die Hard. So I don't know. I think sometimes, I just think, I don't know. I don't think it's much a reflection of our society now.
Well, and I asked myself, like, could this movie have been made before 2022? And I think, yes, sure. Like, it could have.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so that's kind of what
that's a good way of saying what my bloviating in three words or so. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I think you could say that hindsight is going to be 2020 on this. Maybe in 10 years we'll look back and we'll be like, oh, yeah, this seems like a movie that was made after the pandemic or, you know, sure. Something like that. But it's not Host, folks. Like, it's not, you know, it's sure. Not like, wow, this is so indicative of the time. So the last thing I just want to talk about, again, trying to keep it as spoiler-free as possible, but we have to do a Kills Are Good segment. Curtis, drop the clip.
Kills are good!
Kills are good!
There's some amazing kills in this film that really reignited my love of horror movies, I have to say. Like, there were some amazing kills in this film that were, like, very unique, very fun. So just wanted to, again, without giving too much away, Curtis, can you describe, or name, I will say, your favorite kill of this film?
Taylor, I can't recall off the top of my head which one I told you initially, but I this one's different, but it's just one that comes off the top of my head, and it's a kill that does not involve Santa, but it also involves an icicle, which I really enjoyed that one. I mean, Santa has a modus operandi in this movie, but I loved the kills that were holiday themed, for lack of a better word.
Yes.
And the icicle, yeah. I just was like, you know, how fitting. It was really good. It was, the effects are great in this movie, so I really enjoyed that aspect of it too. And I just was thinking, something about getting killed with an icicle is so weird, because it's just going to melt down at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just something.
It's really dark.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, you're killed by something that turns into nothing.
Well, there's actually two icicle kills. Are you're talking about the first one or the second one?
I'm talking about the one near the end of the movie. Am I missing one?
Okay. Yeah. The one where the very first Santa kill.
You know, maybe that's when I was grabbing popcorn. I can't remember.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, there's actually two icicle kills in this film, folks. And don't worry, it doesn't feel repetitive. Look, Curtis didn't even remember.
Sure. So. Well, I was pissing, but yes.
My favorite kill in this film has got to be the Christmas tree star. Again, kind of what you said, like, the more Christmassy the kill, the better, in my opinion. And this was the most Christmassy kill of the film, was with the Christmas tree star.
There's one, there's also, you know, you mentioned, I should also say, you mentioned Home Alone earlier as a comparison. The Home Alone kills, just great. Yeah. I mean, they're really fun.
Yeah. That was Trudy at her best, I think. Yes. That was my favorite scene with Trudy in it. Very cute. It's like she saw Home Alone for the first time, and then she's like, I'm going to do that, but, like, way gorier. So, good for her. Curtis, that's feminism. Anyway, that's Violent Night. It's a recent release. It's still in theaters, and it will be when this episode releases, so I really, really recommend checking it out. Curtis, sounds like you had a good theater experience. This was probably the only good theater experience I've had all year in 2022. I've sat with the worst audiences, like people talking at this tone of voice, looking on their phone. Like one person was even playing a video on their phone next to me during the menu. I had to move seats. Like, it was horrible. But this film, first of all, I made sure to sit not near anybody, so that helped. But people, as you said, were laughing, gasping. At one point, I wish I could remember what it was, but a few people even started clapping. It was very fun. So,
oh, I love the clap.
Yeah.
Taylor, I haven't had one bad theater experience all year. That sounds miserable.
Yeah. Well, that's what you get for going to the AMC theaters in Tallahassee. So that's me. That's what I get. Okay, Curtis, I have two pieces of trivia for this film. Number one, I read this. I cannot find it again. So potentially this is not true, but I heard that this was initially supposed to be a film about set at Easter instead of Christmas, but David Harbour, who had already been signed on to the film, apparently refused to dress up as the Easter Bunny, so they changed it to Christmas, and he dressed up as Santa.
Why did he refuse to dress as the Easter Bunny?
I don't know. Maybe it's not masculine enough for him. I don't know. That's just pure speculation. Pure speculation.
That's embarrassing.
That's pure speculation. It's pure speculation. And then the second piece of trivia is, after Santa Claus, obviously played by David Harbour, takes starts killing people, Mr. Scrooge asks whether the protagonist could be a small town cop with five kids, a reference to Stranger Things and Harper's character in that show. Chief Hopper, obviously. Curtis does not like Stranger Things, so he doesn't care as much about that trivia, but I thought maybe our audience would like that. So
I'm interested.
There you go, Curtis. That's Violent Night. We both enjoyed it. Really recommend checking it out.
Who are you, bad kid?
Punish!
And before we wrap up today, or before we get into our What Have You Been Watching segment, which we always end on, we're going to do a classic Real Films game, This or That, Ho 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 edition.
Wow.
So, Curtis, do you want to get us started? Obviously, longtime listeners of the pod will know our This or That. We give each other scenarios. Would you rather this or that? And then we have a fun discussion.
Well, so. Taylor, I'm going to start with one that I think I'm worried that I maybe asked before, but I can't remember. But
okay.
Are you a Florida Christmas or a white Christmas? Which do you prefer?
That's funny. I was just talking about that with Chris last night, because he's never had a white Christmas. And I was like, you're not missing much. It's just cold. I guess because, I mean, we grew up in Florida. So like all of my Christmas traditions are Florida ones, like with no snow. But I will say, like, having a white Christmas is nice. Just because it mimics what you see on TV, like going sledding, drinking hot chocolate, like all that kind of stuff. But I'm still going to go with the Florida Christmas. When we lived in Sarasota, well, this isn't Christmas, but it's New Year's. Instead of a ball drop, they had a pineapple drop is what I'm trying to say. And I like cheesy Florida traditions.
That's
like
the Christmas season, at least.
Yeah.
Taylor, I just don't like the heat. I like cold. So anything that's colder is better. If I lived up north, I would be saying the opposite, though. I would be like, well, Florida Christmas, it's not cold at all. So it's just a product. I think I'm the opposite. I'm much more negative than you, and I'm the opposite. Mm-hmm. So I'm a product of Florida as well, and I'm miserable by its weather constantly, including right now where I have two fans blowing on me as we speak.
I know, but be honest with yourself. You don't want to live somewhere where it snows. Snow sucks.
No, that's a good point.
It adds so much to your day. Yeah, it adds, you have to put on your boots. You have to put on a big, heavy coat everywhere you go. It tracks in. There's always water in your house. It sucks. It's fun for like 2 hours every week.
I'm saying I prefer a white Christmas, but I'm not saying I want to live where there's a white Christmas. So,
but in order to get a white Christmas, you have to put up with the other things surrounding it.
Well,
is what I'm saying.
The person who I'm staying with has to put up with it. But anyway.
Anywho, okay, well, my number one, I'm going to start off easy here because I think I know what your answer is going to be. Excuse me. Gosh. That beat strip is getting to me. Curtis, would you rather never have peppermint mocha again or never have eggnog again? You're kind of a peppermint mocha guy.
Yeah, I think I'd rather never have eggnog again because I like eggnog.
Really?
But we have some in the fridge right now and I haven't drank in it. So I'd rather have peppermint mocha around. And I like peppermint stuff. So it's not like I'm drinking a peppermint mocha all the time, but I think I'll go peppermint mocha is what I would rather have.
Wow, folks. The Avra Films podcast is changing forever because we used to agree on everything and now we don't. Curtis, I would never have peppermint mocha again because the idea of going at Christmas without eggnog is absolutely... I don't even like eggnog that much, but I have to drink it every Christmas. Right. I have to, like, buy a gallon of it, have two cups, and then throw it out all dejected on, like, January 15th.
Right, yeah. Throw out half of it.
That's my Christmas tradition.
Well, Taylor, my next question is kind of related to that. Do you prefer regular eggnog or soy nog? Or which nog? What is your favorite type?
God, which nog? I actually do prefer soy nog. Because eggnog, I've seen this on TikTok, like, about eggs giving people the ick. Like, you like eggs until you think about what you're eating, and then you're like, that's kind of how I am with eggnog. Like, I'm, like, halfway through it, and then I'm like, this is nasty. So I do prefer soy nog, and I like the Califia Farms one. That's very,
oh, you,
very
yeah,
tasty.
You've mentioned that before. I'm more of an eggnog guy. I just like the thickness of it. It's kind of like weirds me out how thin the soy nog is. I don't know. It's just kind of strange. Yeah. Do you prefer Southern Comfort or Jim Beam to go in your eggnog?
I'm a SoCo girl.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I think that's...
You're a SoCo girl.
I'm
as
a
well.
SoCo girl. Yeah. Yeah, but
even though saying SoCo reminds me of Justin telling me what his shot of choice was in college, which is SoCo and lime. Which, like, literally gives me water mouth. not good.
Taylor, we've disagreed on all of these so far, by the way.
So. Except for the SoCo, obviously.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah. I mean, we're not monsters, so.
Curtis, would you rather be one of Santa's elves or be a 13-inch nutcracker?
I mean... Probably
you're a sentient nutcracker.
Elf or you're a sentient nutcracker. I'm probably an elf. Yeah. I don't want to be a sentient nutcracker either. So I'm going to go. What a strange question. I think I'll go elf. Elves create things. That's cool, right? Yeah. So
yeah, I would rather be an elf too. I guess we're finally agreeing on something. Nutcrackers kind of freak me out. Actually,
they're weird looking.
Like them.
There is a scene in Violent Night involving a nutcracker though that had me cackling.
Yes, it's actually really funny. That's what made me think of it. That's what made me.
That's
think
very
of it.
Good, Taylor. Yeah. I my final question is: real tree or fake tree?
This is a good one, Curtis, because I have historically been a real tree.
Oh wow!
Girl, But this year, Joss and I have finally decided we are going to buy a fake tree. And that's where we're going to do fake trees moving forward. Real trees are a huge pain in the ass. They're
Taylor,
a huge pain in the
this
ass.
This is crazy that this is the one we're agreeing on because I thought we would disagree. Chanel has, producer Chanel, excuse me, has totally converted me to fake tree life. We have a few fake trees. They're all tiny. We like, we're tiny tree people, but, I'm totally convinced that fake tree is the better option. You buy one and you have it, you use it once a year and you have it forever. And it looks nice if you decorate it. So I like the smell of a real tree, but I've also discovered candles exist. So you get that in the house anyway.
That's the most important thing I think about a fake tree. Invest in a good one that looks nice. But like a real tree, if you have a cat, is not going to look good after like 2 weeks. Like Omar completely strips the bottom foot of the tree of any pine needles. Right. So it's like it looks like shit by the end of Christmas, you know. So I actually think a fake tree looks better in a lot of circumstances. And I agree. I have a candle that smells exactly like a tree. Just burn that shit and you're good to go.
Yeah, I was watching that Lindsay Lohan Christmas movie. We had some sticky toffee pudding. We had the Christmas candle and it smelled like Christmas. I was watching a beautiful Christmas movie with a gorgeous Lindsay Lohan. And
we'll get into that in a second. We have one more this or that, Curtis.
Sorry. Go on.
This one is, I saved the best for last. Curtis, would you rather get your tongue stuck on an icicle, like in Dumb and Dumber, or go flying across a highway on your sled, like in National Lampoon?
So, one torture or another. Am I guaranteeing that I don't get hit by a car? I mean,
no, you're.
I mean, the icicle. Then
he narrowly avoids. he narrowly avoids death.
I mean, icicle, obviously, then because you know. I'll have my tongue stuck. I'm not going to die, you know, so I'll go with the tongue stuck on the icicle.
I'm going with sled because the humiliation of getting your tongue stuck to an icicle is not something I think I could withstand.
I'd rather die.
To live that down. Literally rather die. Also, as I said at the top of the show, I really, really relate to Clark Griswold, for better or worse. Mm. By that, I think I just mean I relate to Dad around the holidays. Yeah.
Our dad is very similar, correct.
I was putting up the lights outside and I was standing on one of our like kitchen stools on top of my porch stairs. And as I was standing up there trying to put the lights up, I was like, I could easily die like this. Like, why am I doing this? It's not worth it. But the lights look really good. So it was worth it.
I guess you got some usefulness out of it.
Anyway, Curtis, another Christmas episode in the books. This is always a great episode. Our listeners love these episodes. So I'm glad to be able to provide those. But before we sign off for the day, do you want to let the listeners know what you've been watching, in addition to the Lindsay Lohan movie that you've been mentioning?
Right. Well, Taylor, actually, I just want to go over something really quickly. And that is, are you familiar with the Sight and Sound polls that come out every 10 years?
Sights and Sounds in Laconia, New Hampshire?
No. Sight and Sound magazine, they've been putting out a list of top 100 films of all time every 10 years since 1952. And every year, more and more horror films have gone on it. And I just wanted to go quickly through a few of them. This is, again, critic...
have been added?
What's that?
Can you explain how it works? Like, the horror films that have been added recently or that they've been on the list?
Every 10 years, they send out thousands of ballots to critics. There's also a director's list, but the critics' film list is like the definitive one, I guess, because I really don't know why it's always the critics' one. But they send out these ballots to thousands of critics around the world and basically compile it every 10 years. Again, since 1952, every 10 years. And again, just every year, every 10 years, we've seen the horror genre be more and more accepted as kind of like a mainstream acceptable genre to put on like top 100 lists of all time. The top lists have been, the top of the list is like Vertigo, Citizen Kane, things like that. But so a list like that has been including more and more horror films. And it's topped out this year by number 8, Mulholland Drive by David Lynch. But we have we have Psycho at 31. We have Rear Window at 38, which we covered on the podcast. And a little bit lower down, we have some more interesting, more interesting choices. Parasite made the list at number 90.
Goodness.
And Get Out made the list at number 95. I was really happy to see that.
I thought that was going to be on there. Yeah.
Blue Velvet 84, Shining 88. Those are maybe more obvious ones. But I was just really happy to see this. Horror is getting more. I mean, Parasite's not exactly a horror movie, but Get Out is squarely a horror movie. And
it's a social thriller, okay?
Oh, right. Just like The Shining, too. Yes. I'm just... Yeah. The Shining is, again, a film that maybe would not have seen the light of day 10 or 20, especially 20 years ago, and, you know, Get Out the same. So it's glad to see... I'm just happy to see, you know, I like movies of all different genres, but I'm a horror fan. And to see, like, a mainstream, you know, definitive top 100 list include a handful of horror movies is really cool. So,
Agreed.
Yeah.
Thanks for letting the listeners know that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, what movies have you been watching?
Oh, no, I just wanted to go over that, Taylor. I'm watching a lot. I'm watching a lot for 2022, our list, but nothing that has really stood out to me in the past few weeks.
Interesting.
So, you know, I watched The Menu earlier this week. I felt kind of the same way. It's okay. It's a fun movie. But, like, I'm just trying to binge as many 2022. Well, also, you know, bad Netflix Christmas movies, but that's not horror, Taylor. So, just trying to get a lot of new 2022 horror movies. I'm going to see Bones and All this week. Really trying to get as good of a 2022 list as I can.
Nice. I've seen quite a few 2022 releases since we last recorded. Obviously, The Menu, you mentioned that. I also finally caught Smile. Nice. Gave it a 3.5 stars on Letterboxd. Honestly, surprisingly good movie.
Yep.
I actually ended up wishing it was a little bit more cheesy. Like, I thought it was going to be kind of cheesy, and then it was like more of like a serious horror film about people creepily smiling, which I didn't think was going to be possible, but it is, and they do a good job with it. Surprisingly few like jump scares. Like, it was mm-hmm. a pretty straightforward horror film, so I really liked it. I thought. Yeah, ended up being a lot higher on it than I thought I would. I thought I was like, okay, well, I got to watch Smile if I'm going to do a 2022 horror list. You know, I can't keep it off, but ended up really liking it. Finished watching it over Thanksgiving with producer Chanel.
Nice.
We had a grand old time.
Nice.
On the opposite side of the spectrum, Curtis, we have They Them. Ugh. Have you seen this film?
No, I've been avoiding it.
It's as cringy and bad as people think it was. It's bad. I gave it a 1.5 stars. Honestly, like, the only thing I liked about it was, like, the summer camp setting, and then that lead, I forget what their name is, Theo something, they were good. But besides that, like, it was horrible. Like, it was bordering on offensive, like, bad. Mm. So I don't recommend it. I will say that producer Tori did like this film, thought it was, like, genuinely scary and interesting. But I think she's in the minority in that opinion.
So.
I think that she's in the minority. wouldn't recommend it, but I'm glad I watched it. You know, I'm always down to watch a 2022 release, and I wanted to give it a shot.
The summer camp aspect of it almost drew me in, but then I saw the 1.6 on Letterboxd, and I was like, this is probably not worth my time. Yeah. So
that's almost exactly what I gave it, so that's fine. And then, as I mentioned, I watched John Wick Part 2. Just amazing stuff. not a horror movie, but I had to give it a shout out. Just
of course.
High art. Well, Curtis, that wraps up our episode for today. You can, and by you, I mean our listeners, can always connect with us on Instagram at @ourrealfilms, Twitter at @AHHREELfilms, or you can shoot us an email, ourrealfilms@gmail.com. As we said at the top, we're going to be on a hiatus until January 11th, when we'll be back with our top 10 of 2022. So I think what would be extra welcome in the email inbox would be any of your 2022 horror recommendations. Because as we've been talking about kind of the entire episode, Curtis and I will be watching at least 10 more films, 10 more 2022 releases over the next month. So if there's any that you think we should check out, please drop us a line.
Mm-hmm.
Curtis, did I miss anything?
No, I think that's a great overview.
All right. Well, thank you so much for listening, everybody, and we'll see you in 2023.
See you in 2023.